Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use and cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Arianna. I am delighted to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast today. You are, I think, our fourth or fifth guest for the 2021 season. And you and I connected right before the holidays about a big headlining article that you had in the Toronto, I believe it was the Toronto Star. Yes, am I right? Yeah. And so I'm delighted to have you on today to talk about that. And I want to hear about some of the response. And as most of my listeners know, I will certainly jump in and offer my opinion, which I'm sure we're pretty much aligned on. But before we do that, how about we just let you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. I'm going to graduate myself from aspiring social entrepreneur to entrepreneur, social entrepreneur. I'm located in Toronto, Ontario, which is in Canada. And I am trying to open a coffee shop called Before Coffee, which will donate a portion of our revenue to the overhead expenses and exclusively the overhead expenses of charity. And the goal is to get that conversation going with the general public about why it's so vital that we fund overhead and not just the cause.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And help me unpack the Before Coffee. So let's let you unpack that and let's see if my assumptions are right.
Okay. Well, so the goal is just to kind of give people an alternative to their normal everyday rituals where they can actually feel like they're giving back. I think a lot of customers are looking for opportunities to be giving back to local or to local businesses or to charities. But on the flip side of things, it's really about having this conversation about why overhead is valuable. So the goal is that about 10% of our revenue will actually go to a featured charity for a portion of time. So every quarter we'll feature a different charity. And the idea is that customers that maybe aren't so familiar with the language, aren't so familiar with the charitable sector or nonprofit sector, this idea presented to them that you're helping support a charity, but not only are you helping support a charity, you're helping them pay their employees or pay their marketing budgets or things that are very normally seen as very unattractive to donors. And it's just to get people thinking about what the value in that is. And I think if we give them a tangible example right there, so, you know, this month you're helping this charity give their staff a raise. Employee, because that means that they can, you know, set out on this project or this goal. It gives them an actual tangible example of of why there's value to that, and hopefully gets the conversation going on a more general level outside of the nonprofit sector itself.
Fascinating. Well, I am delighted. So you caught my attention because, and for the sake of our listeners, I'll make sure to put this article in the show notes. But you published an opinion piece, right? Let's see. It looks like it was right after the, right before or after Giving Tuesday, that said, don't villainize overhead costs for charities this Giving Tuesday. Now, that's a conversation that I've perhaps been involved with for probably the last decade or so. And certainly anyone who's been around for a while knows that conversation. But I thought it was a particularly timely piece. I had not seen someone tie it right around, tie it to Giving Tuesday necessarily. But I got the impression on social media that you were getting a lot of attention from this piece. Tell us about that.
Yes, absolutely. The only feedback that I've gotten that's even remotely constructive or negative has been that we should always be funding overhead. And I would like to clarify that I do agree with that. I centered it around Giving Tuesday so that it had a chance in being in the newspaper and actually seeming more timely and relevant, because this conversation, like you said, you've been having it for a decade. I think anyone that's been in this industry has tirelessly been having this conversation, and it's overdue. But really what I wanted to do is just give, I imagined it as a tool for charities to use and for people working in nonprofits, a kind of, she said it, I did it, but look at this, these are things that need to be said, because, I know that many people in the industry feel this way, but it's not really the place, in my perspective, for charities or nonprofits to be saying these things themselves. So I wanted to kind of vocalize it from somebody removed from a charity, from somebody who's not actually directly tied to any certain mission, and bring out the point that there's value in funding overhead and kind of thinking like a business for charities. And we just don't allow them to do that, to consider that even.
Yeah. When I read your article the first time, I loved that. I think it's three or four, maybe. Yeah, it's four paragraphs in, you start to really tackle this idea of efficiency, which I think is the, and you even use the word pull back the curtain. I'm a big Wizard of Oz fan, and sort of understanding who's hiding behind the, I honestly don't think, and having read your article, I sort of get a sense that you don't either. I don't think it's so much that overhead is the problem. It's just that we've sort of sold overhead as the big evil monster that's hanging up on the wall, and behind the curtain is this sort of this wizard of what I consider to be sort of this efficiency, predictability, and control that the nonprofit sector just sort of obsesses about. And so, and there's even been some extraordinary stuff that's been written by some of your friends in Canada about the way that we sort of, as a society, sort of fall in love with this idea of efficiency, but who really sort of gives to an organization because they're particularly efficient, or even a coffee shop, who necessarily asks the question, you know, how efficient are you at making that particular cup of coffee? I just don't know that that's really the question that I'm inclined to ask. I just want to know that my cup of coffee is a pretty darn decent cup of coffee. And if you give it to me with a friendly smile, I'll probably pay you what I want to pay you for it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to bring, is this certain level of naiveness to the industry. Yeah. That just looking at it from this perspective of, I came fresh out of business school. I wanted to do something good. I wanted to participate in the nonprofit sector. I knew what I was getting into, and I knew that, you know, I wasn't going to make a good salary doing it. I wasn't going to get, you know, the bells and whistles that I might get elsewhere. But I think what inspired me is this idea of people wanting to do good in their careers, wanting to do good with their time, and this big issue, like you said, that's just kind of, we made up, we kind of villainized overhead for no reason, that's preventing us from actually doing it. So I just come at it from this perspective of, you know, this is what we want to do with businesses. Why can't we do that with charities? Why can't we bolster their infrastructure? Why can't we empower their employees in any way that we can, and give them the technology and all the resources that they need to be solving the problems that they're trying to solve?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've sort of picked up on that I don't think that we talk enough about in the nonprofit sector, and I don't want to pick on any highly efficient nonprofit. We certainly don't have to name names or anything, but in the for-profits, they certainly the stuff you would have talked about in your business classes, certainly the things that we talked about in my business classes in college and graduate school was the idea that those enterprises that are particularly efficient and those enterprises that, you know, keep their costs down and where efficiency is really sort of is also where volume tends to get really out of hand. You sort of balance the efficiency goal, the goal of being as efficient as we possibly can with extraordinary volume. And volume tends to be that place where I think fundraising, for example, all of our listeners are generally from the fundraising space within the nonprofit sector. I tend to think that volume is actually sort of where we've gotten out of control. And, you know, we can think about your coffee shop, for example. There is a point at which your volume just totally can get out of hand. I mean, you can have too many people in the coffee shop.
Yeah.
Some of the highest volume. I oftentimes in a seminar that we teach, I oftentimes remind people that it's the high volume, low cost, high volume enterprises in our country that are oftentimes also the ones that end up in the headlines for exploiting people, whether it's their employees, whether it's their customers, exploiting someone. The people who are manufacturing their products, somebody ultimately where efficiency and volume is sort of the goal ultimately gets exploited. And I tend to think that what we're not talking about when we talk about overhead is if we're not willing to pay these people, somebody's going to eventually be accused of exploitation. Am I right?
Absolutely. Yes. And that's very much what this passion of mine is born from is people in the workplace. My focus in school and kind of everything that I have been doing has been on the human resources side. And so to have people working in an industry where they feel purpose and where they feel fulfilled in their work because they're fulfilling a social cause every day should be something that I think should be celebrated. And I was earlier this year doing some interviews with people in the nonprofit industry. And I had spoken to so many people who had spent their whole lives in the nonprofit industry. And some of them even said things like, you know, I just hope that maybe somewhere along the lines I made a difference, somewhere I helped someone. And to have a whole career centered around that kind of fulfillment and not really feel it because you're working in a place that just, and it's by no fault, like you said, of the charities themselves. It's just that that's not the kind of mindset of charities is that there's this idea that if you want to work for a social cause, you have to be a martyr for the cause and that, you know, people should willingly be taking pay cuts and things if they're going to find fulfilling work in charities. And that came up a lot when I was asking people, how do you feel about overhead? What's your perception as a donor with overhead? A lot of people came back and said, well, you know what, if they're going to work in a charity, like they want to be doing something good and they're doing something good. They don't need to make a good salary doing that. And that's such a strange way of thinking to me.
Do you think in some way, so I teach over at the local college, I teach nonprofit management courses and I teach social entrepreneurship courses. And I tend to look at my students and I tend to think, okay, this is a much more informed, a much more, you know, they're going to come out of college with a lot of things. And this is undergrad stuff. So these are college students that are 18 to 22 years old. And they're thinking very critically about the work that I perhaps wasn't sort of thinking about it through a critical lens until I was maybe in the work and maybe in the work for 10 years and perhaps even say in my mid 30s. Do you think in some ways that the nonprofit sector, when we look at things like overhead, when we start sort of questioning our judgments about things like efficiency and predictability and so forth, do you think in some ways we're just sort of growing up?
I think so. I think there is, I think we're seeing it in a lot of different areas and we briefly touched on it, just in our little chat beforehand, on LinkedIn, but we're starting to see this awareness that there are people behind every organization. There's, you know, the awareness of essential workers is something that we've only really been talking about publicly in the last year, which is wild because I mean, how many essential workers are there? And it took a pandemic for us to have that conversation. So I think we're starting to appreciate that it's, again, no longer curtains and facades and smoke machines, and it's actually people that are doing all of these things. And I think that it's being seen more, and I think younger generations are expecting more from their workplaces as these things are brought to light, as we're seeing people be held more accountable. I think that a lot of people are expecting going into the workforce that they're going to be treated well. There's the also, of course, the other end of it that gets to a certain level of entitlement and ridiculousness. But I think we are starting to realize that we should be valued as employees. And I'm thinking that organizations are also learning that the more you value your employees, the more successful you are as an organization. And I hope that that starts to trickle into the nonprofit industry.
Do you think employers, so I have said it a couple of times with several of my guests that when we're speaking specifically about the fundraising profession and the idea that the fundraising profession, I oftentimes call it sort of, I refer to it as sort of being in the midst of its messy adolescence, sort of collectively. So if we were looking at fundraising as sort of as an individual standing here, it looked like my stubborn 16-year-old son who doesn't want to, sometimes he says really bright things and sometimes he's, you know, fights too much with his 10-year-old sister, for example. But part of what I think is the extraordinary opportunity, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, the connection that you and I made, here you are publishing in a major newspaper, a very thought-provoking sort of piece. And I have to imagine that perhaps if you were signing on today with a nonprofit organization, the sort of the implications, sort of if I was reading between the lines, I don't know if your supervisors are thinking this critically. Are the expectations that are of, and I'm also thinking of the young people that are coming out of the courses that I teach over at the college, I oftentimes wonder how ready our supervisors, our current leaders who've been in the field, say 10, 20, several decades, whatever, are really ready to supervise this younger generation of young people that are coming into the sector. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think with my experience, my small experience in the nonprofit industry and from just this overhead issue, it seems like in the nonprofit sector, for the most part, when it comes to people managing, there's just not even that opportunity to consider people management. There's so much going on. Most managers, any manager that I've had in the nonprofit industry has had six hats to wear and has had so many things to do that the concept of how to motivate our people and how to keep them on board and how to keep them engaged and all these things just seem like frivolities that we can't afford. They're not even on our radar. So I think that in the nonprofit industry, that's why I'm particularly passionate about bringing that overhead funding, because it allows for the proper staffing, the proper management to be there so that they actually have the freedom to think about these things. Because I think once you're at the survival level of we got to get everything done and we got to stay afloat, there's no opportunity for thinking beyond that. And this is very much thinking beyond that, thinking about how we can actually further empower our staff. When it comes to like my generation and younger in particular, I don't think anyone is ready to manage them, to be completely honest. In my experience, I used to be a coach. So for individuals that were the same age as me or younger, 18 to 22, like you said, the university students. And there's such a difference in managing the industries before the millennial and the industries after the millennial. And in fact, when I was in school, we always had that. We were learning these are basic business practices as we know, and then this is how you apply it to the millennial, because they're very different. So I, when it comes to that, that kind of is, it's a learning curve, but I think that it's something that's just not even really on the radar of many charities. Is how do people manage, and how does that now apply to millennials? How does it apply to Generation Z, particularly when it comes to volunteer management and things like that? We rely heavily on young people for volunteers. And that the way we communicate with Generation Z, for example, is so different than the way we communicated with anyone before.
I always promise my very enthusiastically, I always promise my guest sort of a curveball at about 20 minutes in. I'm curious. One of the things I'm working on with a current book project that I'm working on is this notion of sort of the marketization or the idea. Like I said a few moments ago, I teach these courses at the college that are both teach the nonprofit students and I teach the social entrepreneurship students. And sometimes there's some overlap, but there's also, if I'm sort of reading between the lines of someone like yourself, who's here you are vocalized on a very national and perhaps international sort of scale, having things to say about the nonprofit sector, but also, in sort of startup mode, starting a business, so a for-profit business, in order to solve some of the social problems. I'm going to get around to my question here. I promise, really quickly, and I hope you don't.
Give me time to breathe.
I hope I don't lose you on this. But it's the idea that young people are coming into the sector. And they're looking at the way that the sector has historically done what it does. So whatever it's doing, be it this overhead stuff or whatever, and it's being perceived as somewhat dysfunctional or sort of out of order, or they can't get their act together or whatever. And so the solution is to not sign on with the local charity, to say, no, I'm not going to work inside the charity, inside the organization. So I'm not actually going to go on the payroll of a 501c3. I'm actually going to go and prop up a for-profit business and go the route you're going, for example. Do you think that's the – and we've had plenty of banter about that here in the States, as I'm sure you've had in Canada and other places, that there are market solutions that perhaps can generate more, you know, higher margins, and perhaps you can use more – entrepreneurial ideas, and there's not as many constraints, and perhaps, you know, we assume that it's not quite as dysfunctional as some of us in the sector. Is that sort of some of the way that you're approaching this? You just don't know that you can make quite as much of an impact? I promised I would get around to the question. Do you sort of feel like you can't make as much of an impact in the sector as you can sort of on the sidelines, generating resources in sort of a social entrepreneurship sort of way?
Yeah, absolutely. It's unfortunate to say, and I also kind of morally think about that a lot. Like, is there an impact that I can make in the industry versus should I just keep, you know, going this way for profit? And the way that I see it and the way I approach it, and much of what you're saying, is this kind of idea of like, you can't fight capitalism, so just join them and make the best out of it and change the way we think about it. Absolutely. I for a while struggled with whether or not my coffee shop would be a for profit or not. And honestly, it just logistically is so much easier for it to be a for-profit. I have so much more freedom with what I do. And the way I've decided to spin that on its head and maybe make me feel a little bit less guilty about it, but also have this conversation continue about the difference between for-profit and charities, is that I'm trying to make it a very social business, to make it a business that has so much freedom. So it's going to use all of that freedom intentionally, and it's going to make an impact in any way that it can, so that hopefully not only are we changing the way we think about charities, but we are also changing the way we think about for profits. And I think the other thing that it brings to mind is that charities are, I would never say that we should replace charities with for-profits. That's not what I'm saying. Or I don't know, perhaps decades, hundreds of years down the line, I don't know what the economy will look like in that sense. But as far as it goes now, I think the reason why I want to support charities and not just shift to a for-profit kind of world is because charities have been doing this for so long. Charities and nonprofits have been experts on all of the problems that they are tackling. And I think as soon as they're given the resources to fulfill their audacious goals and their wildest dreams, I think they will smash any of these problems out of the park. It's just a matter of that lack of resources. And I think that the for-profit is just unfortunately, the easiest way to throw resources at the nonprofit sector and give them the ability to do the things that they have been trying to be doing for so long.
So I think I have a general sense of what your business model is going to look like, but do you actually want to be, do you want to be the Starbucks or, you know, do you want to be the extraordinary next Starbucks who's selling an extraordinary cup of coffee and creating extraordinary margins and therefore partnering with the nonprofit organization down the street who's solving some social problem? Or do you actually want to be the coffee shop that's actually still perhaps creating that extraordinary coffee and that extraordinary margin, but actually doing the work itself as well?
I chose the model of a coffee shop because it can be repeated. Like if it is successful, obviously you can chain it. You can become the next Starbucks, but that has not ever been my intentions with the business.
Yeah.
And so by that, I mean, if it works and if this is successful, I would love to see one in Pennsylvania helping local Pennsylvania shops, you know, and like that. Sorry, but I'm trying to be American, but something that can stay local and still have that kind of impact and start that conversation. But for me, it's very much about doing as much as I can to actually solve this problem. So in my future, a lot more resource creation for nonprofits and learning new and different creative ways of helping nonprofits and that. And the overhead kind of realm, as opposed to expanding more coffee shops, if that makes sense. Like I would like to branch out and be able to provide courses for nonprofits and provide different resources that empower them to start asking for funding for their overhead. And that's actually what I anticipate I'll be working on until I can open the coffee shop while lockdowns are still in place, rather. But yeah, so I'm a lot more centered on the one location and kind of dealing with the problem and thinking creatively about the problem of funding overhead versus more coffee shops funding more charities. Because yeah. I don't think the problem is so, I mean, it's a coffee shop, we'll be real. It's only going to be a certain amount of money that I can be donating quarter to these charities. I think the impact is much more in that changing the way we think about it. So that's where I'm a lot more focused.
Okay, so before I let you go, nobody writes an article as you did, gets as much attention as you have, and thinks like you do. I mean, you've demonstrated that you're a very thoughtful, critically thinking individual. What's the next article? What are you sort of itching to have an opinion about next? That's got to be the way we sort of wrap this up. You've got to have something else in there, and if you haven't figured it out, I'll help you figure it out.
Thank you. Oh, goodness. I have so many opinions, but this topic that I think I'm best educated about, the topic of funding overhead, but what I've been itching to talk about and what I even wanted to talk more about in that article, but word count and things like that, I really want to focus more on the idea of people getting into the nonprofit industry and then being driven out of the nonprofit industry. I think that is where my passion comes from, is people that are aspiring to have this fulfilling career or aspiring to make an impact on something that matters to them, but that industry is not responsive to them or can't at least help them. This, for me, this business is about taking good intent and taking all of the goodness that is in the world and actually using it in a way that is valuable. And so I would like to talk a little bit more about how we treat people on the human resource side of things in the nonprofit industry and how we can, even in less costly ways, find ways to make them feel valued and make them want to stay and stick it through with these organizations.
I'm right there with you. I think one of the things that we haven't thought critically enough in the nonprofit sector, I don't think this is sort of a, I don't want to make a sweeping generalization about everyone who's sort of in HR leadership roles, but I don't know that we've thought critically enough about how people gravitate towards the nonprofit sector. They land in these jobs. Oftentimes they land where overhead starts to become a problem is oftentimes in these administrative and fundraising roles, where we're oftentimes driving, we're trying to drive down and reduce cost. And we forget that they signed on for much more meaningful work. And in some ways they're very detached from the meaningful work. The reason I landed at the children's organization was to perhaps help the children. But if I'm raising money for the organization, I'm not necessarily touching and spending time and interacting with these children. I'm out spending time with my peers and older adults and asking them for really big checks, not these unfortunate children who live on the wrong side of town. And I think that I'm guessing that's sort of what's in between the lines of what you're talking about is that is we don't understand why people we don't understand well enough why people gravitate to the nonprofit sector. We don't understand that the for-profit world, which I think is some of the messy predicament you may find yourself in, is that they're seeking meaningful work. And I think a lot of young people are trying to find that in wherever they can find it. And today there's so many different opportunities. You can either create it for yourself or you can find someone to latch on to and do it with them. But I think people are just saying, I'm going to stick it out. I'll forgo earnings. I'll forgo multiple cars in the driveway. I'll forgo square feet in my house. I'll forgo a lot of things in order to have very meaningful work. And I think the nonprofit sector ought to be the one who's most reaping the benefits of that. But I don't know that we think well enough to sort of ensure that. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of what I learned and a lot of what I believe in strongly is that you can motivate people from very intangible ways.
Yeah.
It's not about giving them the best salary. It's not about, the best compensation packages. It's very much intrinsic to their beliefs. And so, like you said, there's this power by being a cause-driven organization that you have that connection. And so you really just have to, as management, make that connection for people and keep that connection alive and make it, like you said, a little bit more apparent in their day-to-day work. And that's how you remind people that that's what they got into it for. I didn't go into the nonprofit sector expecting that I was going to make any kinds of money. I didn't go in with really many expectations, but I was still driven out of it because I very quickly detached from what it was that I was there to do. And the craziest part about it is I was working for an organization that had a very concrete, tangible way of looking at it. Every $250 I raised in that organization, for example, was a flight to somebody that needed medical care. And so that's a really easy, every time I raised $250, I could just tick something off, like, good job, you just helped somebody get medical care. And that didn't exist in the workspace. I had my own little Excel spreadsheet to keep me motivated, but that wasn't something that we spoke about. That wasn't something that was put up on the walls. You know, if we were like a flat hierarchical, non-hierarchical tech company, we'd have a bell to ding every single time you raise $250. So it's just kind of bringing that mentality of why people are here and letting people feel that they aren't meant to be martyrs for the cause, and they aren't martyrs for the cause. They're doing something good in their work every day, and the better they do at it, the more impact they can make. And I think that's what I want to see more of in the nonprofit industry, because it took us too long to figure out that in the corporate world that people just need to be intrinsically motivated. We now know this, and we know that it's impactful. So I'd like to see it more so for the fundraisers that are listening and for all the people that are working hard in this industry.
Well, it has certainly been a pleasure to catch you very early in your journey. I certainly have appreciated this conversation.
Thank you.
I'm delighted that you've found yourself published in a major newspaper and been able to get your opinions out there. I would certainly encourage you to keep going down the path. I think there's the overhead conversation has been talked about and talked about and talked about. And I bet if you keep sort of conjuring up more bold opinions and big ideas, I'm sure that there's many people who will listen, and I'll certainly help you get your voice out there. If people know how to find me, if they're interested in reaching out to you, how would you suggest that they do that?
Absolutely. They can go to either beforecoffee.ca or to any of the social media /beforecoffee.to. To is for Toronto. So Facebook, Instagram, on all of it. So you can reach out there. If you reach out to Before Coffee, it's me that will be answering. So, yes.
It has certainly been a pleasure. You're always welcome back.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.